Good morning. We're going to call this session of the Kitsap County Land Use Hearing Examiner to order, May 26, 2016. I'm Ted Hunter of Sound Law Center, who will hear and decide the applications before us today. And they are two in number. We have on the agenda an application for a conditional use permit and variance requested by Northlake Way Storage. And the second on the agenda is a request by the Central Kitsap School District for approval of a transportation center, food service, and warehouse, also a conditional use permit. For each of these applications, I'm guided by the Kitsap County ordinances, the municipal code that's been adopted by the county commissioners and put in place to guide development of land use within the county. For each of these applications, the staff of the county, and I think each under the review of professional planner, Mr. Jeff Smith, who's with us here today, has prepared a staff report. Copies are available at the back of the room. And that report provides us guidance and assistance in determining if the conditional use permit application as submitted should be approved, if there should be conditions of approval, or if it should be denied. So I rely upon that staff report as one source of information and the exhibit submitted along with that staff report. Secondly, in each case, I hope the applicant or a representative of the applicant is present. Is there someone here for the storage facility? Okay, good morning. And then also, I want to hear from any citizens that have any questions or comments or concerns about either one of these applications. And once we collect that information from the county staff, the applicant, and citizens, I then close the record and make my decision based only on the information presented in this hearing room this morning. And that includes the documents submitted and the testimony given. If there's any appeal from my decision, it's based only on the record made in this hearing room today. If you do testify, we ask that you come forward to the podium that's here in the front of the room, and at that time, I'll administer the oath or affirmation, and then you present your testimony to me. So the first one we have listed is the Northlake Storage Conditional Use Permit and Variance Application. Mr. Smith, are you ready to proceed with that? Please come forward. Raise your hand to take the oath, please. Do you swear to tell truth the testimony you give today?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
I'd like to first include Exhibits 1 through 19 into the record.
You did submit those to me in advance of the hearing. I've placed them in this binder, and we will now have those as part of the record for this application.
Okay, and then the PowerPoint presentation is, would be 20.
You have a number of PowerPoint slides that you intend to present this morning?
Yeah, they're approximately 12.
And how do you intend to proceed? Is that what you wanted to do first, is go through your 12 slides and then take questions from me?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Give background on the project and go through the slides. And then
very good. Then I have a number of questions, and perhaps you or the applicant present can answer them.
Okay.
All right. I'm ready to listen.
All right. My name is Jeff Smith. I'm representing Department of Community Development. I'm a senior planner. I've had over 20 years of experience reviewing projects similar to this. This project will provide storage facilities to the existing neighborhood and folks in Central Kitsap County. The request today is for a conditional use permit for a change in use for the former tavern to a storage facility. It involves storage of pods and possible RV storage, include an office, as well as caretaker's quarters. The application is proposing to use the existing and parking area with no impervious surface areas. So there's going to be no addition. It's going to be using it as is. The proposal also includes a variance. The property was recently designated rural commercial. Along with that zoning designation came additional zoning regulations.
I do want to I'm going to interrupt occasionally to ask some questions. So you say it was recently zoned.
Around 2010.
Around 2010, because there were two dates given. I think the applicant thought it was 2012, but it was 2010.
Actually, I think the year of the rule was 2012, excuse me.
So yes. which zone?
2012.
In 2012, the yes. Rezone to which zone?
Rural commercial. It was originally highway tourist commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And then changed to rural commercial. And it's an isolated piece of property, has historically been used as a commercial use.
And I wanted to ask about that because you mentioned in your staff report, and you may get into this in more detail, that the building is a non-conforming structure and that it's within the setback areas?
Well, it's a non-conforming structure because it does not comply with existing setbacks per the zone.
Yes. And so I'm curious about the need for variance if it's a non-conforming structure. And typically in past hearings and other reviews in this hearing room, a non-conforming structure is recognized as one that may continue to exist in its current location, even though there may be some non-compliance with certain development regulations. But here, it seems that there's seeking of a variance, even though it could continue to exist as a non-conforming structure. Can you explain why that is, what we're doing here?
Well, it's staff's belief that with the change of use, based on our use tables, that the standards that are in effect now apply.
I see. And when you looked at that change of use, did you make a determination whether it was an expansion of use or in any way changing the operation of the previously approved or non-conforming use?
Yeah, the previous use was discontinued between 3 and 4 years ago based on our Title 21 and Title 17. That use goes away.
Okay, this is helpful. You're clarifying then that really we're not looking at this as a non-conforming structure because it lost that status because of the discontinued use.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
That's correct. And staff report includes discussion that what about the previous use. It's all based on reference.
All based on reference.
Or to look at what was taking place on the property 3 to 4 years ago and how the property was used.
And you did that to help assess the impacts on the neighborhood, was that it?
That's correct.
Sort of looking at what might have happened in the past as an indicator of what the impacts of this proposal might be.
Yes, and also it would be to include assessment based on what are future uses in the use table that would maybe create additional impacts.
Okay, all right, thank you. That's helpful. I'm not going to consider this building in a non-conforming building, and that's why we have the variance application in front of us as well.
Yeah, it's not a non-conforming use. But we look at the building.
Good, thank you.
The proposal includes interior remodeling of the existing structure, retention of the caretaker's mobile home, and includes perimeter landscaping for screening around the perimeter of the site. And this is reviewed pursuant to 17.421 for conditional use permits. In addition, this proposal includes a variance to the setbacks for the rural commercial zone. the proposed use would encroach in all four sides based on the development proposal. In addition to the setbacks per the designation, based on footnote 26, anytime a commercial use, rural commercial use, is abutting a residential zone, there's a 50-foot setback. And there's no spur lines or hard pack can be included in that setback. It's supposed to be to limit those impacts to the center of the property. However, this property is pretty small. The property or conditional use permit did receive a DNS, determination of non-significance, and that was made on April 22nd, 2016. And the conditions just talk about referencing existing regulations that are in effect right now. The subject property is located west of the city of Bremerton Urban Growth Area. It's in rural Kitsap County. It's located at 3050 North Lake Way, Northwest. As stated earlier, here's a special parcel map, and it gives it more of a clear location. And this North Lake Way is part of a major connection to West Kitsap County. This is a more as far as enlarged aerial telemetry of the site, which you look at the number of homes that are located around the subject property. They're all in rural residential zoning, and that's one dwelling unit per 5 acres. So a number of these lots would be considered legal lot of record based on they were legally created prior to the Growth Management Act. And so we recognize those. The property is pretty level. There's no critical areas shown on the property based on the county resource maps. It is near Chico Creek, which is located to the east, but it's quite a sizable distance. This represents the rural commercial designation and the residential use around the property. The property across the street is a public facility. It's a substation for Puget Sound Energy. And then this represents the rural residential zoning around it. It's like a donut. The center is the rural commercial zone. And normally that requires a setback of 20 feet from the front and sides and rear if it's abutting another commercial zone. The current uses of the property are on residential homes on smaller lots. In some cases, there's multiple houses on the same parcel. To the south is a mobile home park with approximately 40 units. So the conditional use permit is to convert the 5,091 square foot building to a self-storage facility. Like stated, there is no additional off-street parking required. The building will only serve, and outside will be, only serve as storage, nothing else. North Lake Way has a functional classification of an urban minor arterial. The property will have two access points onto North Lake Way, and it will be a one-way circulation around the site.
Since you just referred to that street, North Lake Way, I need to ask, it's got several references, North Lake Way, North Lake, North Lake Way Northwest, North Lake Way
Northeast.
How is it best identified?
Well, North Lake Way is a summation, how to refer to it, but it's, if you give the directional, it's the same thing, North Lake Way Northwest.
Okay. So that's the proper way to refer to it.
Yeah.
North Lake.
When you include the directional
Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just using a shorthand because it's kind of sprinkled throughout in four or five different ways.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll clear that one up.
This is an aerial photograph supplied by the consultant or the applicant. Shows the adjacent homes that are abutting the rural commercial zone. Shows the lawn area and drain field and next to the manufactured home. And as you can see, there are a number of homes that are located around the perimeter of this site. This is a little different map. It does show the adjacent homes, but it gives you kind of a perspective of the site based on the existing paved area around the building and the existing fence that goes around the perimeter of the commercial use on the site. It's existing 6-foot wood panel fence that was constructed when it was a drinking establishment. The proposal is reviewed per the design criteria in 382.130, and the first one we look at is building height, buffering, and screening modification. As stated, the site does include existing 6-foot wood panel fence around the proposed storage yard. The applicant is proposing to plant vegetation around the perimeter of the site to provide additional screening from the residential properties. There is some discussion that the pods may be stacked up 3 in height.
Tell me more about those. What did you review as the planner for the county as a pod?
Pod is approximately an 8 by 10 foot unit. They're light, they're portable.
And
but
how
strong.
How tall? 8 by 10 and what height?
I'd say about 8 feet tall, yeah.
And so you're looking at screening. This is what you're recommending as the planner for the county, that there be 24-foot tall vegetation?
At least.
At least.
And you can plant columnar trees that are not going to interfere with the storage activity, but provide some vertical height and provide help provide a functional screen.
Over what period of time?
It might take a few years, yes. So it takes about 6 to 10 years, depending on how the soils are prepped and how they're irrigated. They can grow pretty fast, depending on the species of the plant.
And is that, to you, qualify as screening? So there actually be no visual screening for 6 to 10 years? or limited visual screening?
Well, what we do in this particular case is we include a 6-foot wood panel fence in lieu of the vegetation, based on until it reached maturity. Mm-hmm. That's what we typically do. Usually projects like this don't have an existing 6-foot wood panel fence. Mm-hmm. We'd require it. Granted, it would take several years for that vegetation to mature to get to a satisfactory height. However, the pods are not something that's going to be moved around. They're not going to be clanking and providing a lot of noise. They are going to stay stationary.
I guess it's the stacking that I'm
talking
about. If your goal as county planner is I want visual screening between incompatible uses, commercial immediately abutting the residential, it seems one way you might have considered it is until such time visual screening, there shall be no stacking.
Yeah.
Did you consider that?
I have not, but I just found out recently about the stacking. Mm-hmm. My assumption, based on what's in the application, it'd be 20 to 25 pods would be stored out in the parking area, and that would be equal to a single level based on the spaces delineated on the site plan.
Right.
But
that makes sense. In that situation, you're looking at the fence plus landscaping as being appropriate to screen from a single 8-foot high.
Yes.
Odd, but stacking 3 high, which seems to be the proposal, would not receive adequate screening. And that's why we call it a conditional use permit, as we look at what conditions might be appropriate to meet the intent of the code as adopted by your Board of Commissioners. It seems to me here a condition should be considered that there be no stacking of pods, at least until such time as there is suitable screening as determined by the department. And we know landscaping sometimes can take a while, like you said, depending upon soil conditions and maintenance and watering and a number of variables. 24-foot high isn't our typical vegetation screening. It's much lower than that. Does that make some sense to you?
Yes, staff would support that. That's
of course, we'll have the applicant
reasonable.
Weigh in on that.
But. And we can talk to the representative for the applicant to clarify that if that's actually going to occur.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was kind of looking at this application in a prima facie as far as what's there and reviewing it and commenting.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't find out until recently that they were considering stacking.
Okay. Well, thank you for clarifying that.
Mm-hmm.
Please continue.
The next thing would be exterior lighting. If there's any exterior lighting for security around the property, there should not be more than one candle foot leaving the property line. We ask that any lighting have a recessed fixture and any kind of mechanism to limit the glare on the residential property owners.
That's a condition that you're recommending?
Well, we'll look at that through the building permit. It's a standard requirement, and staff will look at that at time of construction or remodeling the building.
But that's the direction that you would be going.
Yes, that's correct.
Any security lighting shall not have any spill off-site.
Yes.
Is that it?
Yes.
Because of the improvements in lighting technology, you can shield lighting so that it's not moving to adjacent properties.
Yeah, and it depends on the height and how it's broadcasted.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is security lighting something that you think is a good idea for this type of use, given similar uses throughout the county? Or do you have any opinion on that?
That's standard operating procedure to have security lighting. Granted, that would, based on staff's experience, would like to see something that's contained on site and not creating. It is in a rural area. And we like to see rural compatibility and limit glare to only where which needs to be lit.
For those areas of the property?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the entire property is being proposed as storage, correct?
Yeah.
And I want to ask you about that. Did you obtain information? It's proposed as a storage and RV storage. And storage units are different than RV storage, aren't they? I mean, they have different.
Yes.
They
yes.
could have different impacts.
Yes.
So when you saw that, what percent might there be RV storage? Could it be the entire lot area?
It could be in substitution where the pods are included. Maybe they include RVs in those same spots.
And you may not know this, and that's why the applicant's essential to weigh in on this. But do you have a sense for one having greater impacts than the others? It seems to me RV impact could be greater. There's a higher likelihood of moving in and out of the site. There's a noise from startup of generators or engines. Very different than a pod that is containing anything within it. And as you said, they would not be moved. So isn't that an important piece of information?
Well, based on frequency of use or movement of those RVs, usually they're stationary for long periods of time until the owner uses them. That's how I've seen it being used, is they just go off and park and they stay there for a long period of time until somebody's ready to use them. They aren't going to create additional or excessive noise above and beyond the background level of traffic that's on North Lake Way, which is a very busy road.
Okay.
I don't anticipate they do stand slightly higher than a single height pod. Otherwise, that's the only impact that I know of outside of water quality, maybe.
There is that, I suppose, too. There needs to be some sort of containment of any waste that might be within. And really, the movement is solely dependent upon the ownership pattern of lifestyle, right?
Yes, that's
correct. How often you use your RV. Some may use every weekend. Others may once a year, if that. So we don't really know, do we? It's hard to quantify what the impacts might be.
No, based on what I've seen on other projects, the property or people who own RVs park them and leave them there for very long periods of time.
Okay.
The applicant's proposing 6 off-street parking spaces. Only 2 are required for the storage facility based on the parking ratio. And only 2 are required for the caretaker's quarters. So the applicant's proposing 6 spaces, and which the applicant complies with that standard. The next one is landscaping. The code requires minimum 15% in landscaping. The applicant says that 47% of the site will be in landscaping of the 1.22 acres. Based on what's proposed for the perimeter landscaping, it's more or less a 5-foot strip around the outside of the fence. The proposed landscaping around the building and there are existing trees on the site as well as the drain field area, which includes lawn. So it would include approximately 47% of landscaping. So the next element of this proposal is the variance. Any kind of variance that exceeds 10% of the numerical value requires a public hearing before the hearing examiner. And there are four criteria that have to be looked at and reviewed to approve the variance. And the first one is special circumstances applicable to the subject property.
You know, before you go through those, mm-hmm. of course, I'm familiar with those, and they're in your staff report.
Okay.
But what I had a challenge with is determining just what the intrusion would be. To what extent would there be intrusion into the required setback area?
Yes. As I stated earlier, mm-hmm. based on the rural commercial zone, the county decided that to limit impacts on the adjacent residential zone, that any commercial use needs to be set back 50 feet from the property line.
Mm-hmm. And what did you review here? What did you see as the intrusion into that 50-foot setback?
Well, the pavement area where the pods are going to be stored, the actual building does not comply with the setback. The setback is intended for a larger tract of land. Mm-hmm. This is more or less a little over a one-acre piece of property.
I get that.
So if you apply the setbacks as per the code, there'd only be about 70 feet in the center, about 100 feet long, and it'd go down to 25 feet. So there'd be very limited area for a new construction. Any new proposal would have to comply with the same zoning, and it would be very rigorous for them as well to comply with the designation.
Okay, I understand. That's mm-hmm. good. The question I'm asking is, if you have a 50-foot requirement, mm-hmm. you're looking at this site plan, the existing buildings, you want to describe carefully what extent is there intrusion into that setback area?
The building will essentially on the south side, the north side of the property, and the west side, and the mobile home will also encroaches into the required setback. Not as much. It's about 37 feet is the setback currently for the mobile home from the property line. Mm-hmm. The use is 5 feet from the south property line. That's how much it would encroach in 45 feet into the setback.
Okay, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah. And the front setback is 7 feet, so it would be 13 feet encroachment, 13-foot encroachment. And then the north side would be about 35 feet as an encroachment.
Okay. So that's what you examined when you looked at should a variance be approved.
That's correct. Thank you. And staff's interpretation of the section 421, Title 17, the hearing examiner cannot reduce the development standards through a conditional use permit when a variance is required. So staff determined a variance and a conditional use permit were required to review this proposal.
Right. I get that.
Okay.
I want to ask you about the proposed, I can't tell what it is, a patio area perhaps on the site plan, the northeast area. It's mm-hmm. it's on your next slide, I believe. You see that area there. Proposed new addition.
Yes. I believe the applicant, what they're doing is following the building sight line, which has already been established. The code does allow, as long as you don't extend beyond that building setback line that's non-conforming, we do allow, in certain circumstances, to include an addition as long as it follows the setback line of what's previously established. Of course, that doesn't necessarily always apply on shorelines for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so Title 17.
You review this as a permissible
yes.
expansion of the nonconforming structure.
Yes. If the expansion exceeded that, then that would be another story.
Thank you.
The second criteria is this proposal consistent with other property rights in the neighborhood? Well, this is the only rural commercial zone in the neighborhood, so it's difficult to compare the two. Will this authorization of the variance be materially detrimental? And through the conditional use permit, staff says this or that this proposal will comply with the conditional requirements as far as additional landscaping, buffering, and the actual use, which is considered low intensity, will not be detrimental to the neighbors. Of course, depending on how high the pods are stacked. And the last one is the variance, the minimum necessary. Well, the applicant is using the existing pavement and building line for setbacks. It is our belief that it is the minimum. The county provide proper public notice. We did receive written comments from Barbara Davis and Frank Welch. Barbara Davis was and Frank Welch were concerned about compatibility with the existing residential neighborhood. And Ms. Davis was also concerned about the elements of crime. And Mr. Welch said that as long as they follow the requirements for buffering and maintaining the compatibility with, i.e., as far as maintaining the 6-foot fence, that he would be supportive of the project, based on what I understand. So based on the criteria for the hearing examiner to evaluate the proposal, staff believes the request is consistent with the comprehensive plan policies. It will comply with noise abatement and visual impacts. And address rural character.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
And staff recommends approval.
I have a couple of questions for you about process, and I hope you can answer them. And if not, they're not critical to today's hearing, but they came up in my review. And one is looking, you referred to this earlier, the chapter about conditional use permit procedure. It's Kitsap County Code 17.421.020, the section you're familiar with?
Yes.
And the challenge in that section is it deals with procedures. And, for example, one section of that section, B, says applications for for hearing examiner conditional use permit shall contain the information required by the submittal checklist established by the department in section 2104045.
That's standard operating procedure. We have checklists for all.
I know, but that section doesn't exist. So it's what do you default to? Since that's been removed from the code, do have a checklist.
Yeah, procedurally we have a checklist.
So maybe it was adopted earlier, but it's something you might want to look at because the code is confusing. If I try to go to 2104045, it's not there.
Yes. Okay.
And similarly, when an application is submitted, the hearing examiner conditional use permit shall be processed as set forward in 2104035. That doesn't exist. That section's gone. So you can see the confusion that I might have, and I think anyone else looking at it. So could you discuss that with your department, the need to do some cleanup of the code?
Yes, we're going through a code
excellent.
Overhaul
then
right
now.
Excellent.
It's a good time for me to bring them to your attention. Yes. I knew you'd be interested.
Yes.
So there's a couple right there that just don't make sense because they're not in the code. Another area that came to my attention in looking at the notice requirements, and there's no question reasonable notice of the hearing was given, and we have a nice certification of posting and publication. The mailing, 400 or 800 feet, it'd be helpful on the certification to circle which one was it. 400 or 800.
Should be 800.
It should be, and I assume it was.
That's...
But it just might be something you discuss within your department. It'd be easy to do that because it says both on the certification, and it's just not just circle one of these.
Okay.
And that would remove any doubt about compliance. And along those same lines, notice of application. There's two types of notice that go out, as you know, a complete application, and the idea is notify surrounding residents and the public that somebody's proposing something for this land, and then the notice of hearing. And it's two different processes. Notice of application for this type 3 review in section 2104210C3.
Mm-hmm.
Very detailed.
Yes.
But it asks that there be posting of the notice of application. And we don't have an indication of posting for this application.
No, we don't post it, per
se. Well, I know. Take a look at that section, if you would. You might want to just make a note of that. 2104210C3. It appears your code requires posting of notice of application. And for some reason, I don't think that's fatal to the hearing today. But I wanted to bring these to your attention because I know your interest in the details of your code. And to make sure, as one of the planners of the county, that the code makes sense and that it's followed as to the procedures.
We do send the notice of application to the paper, as you know.
Yes, and that's covered, and thank you. Your exhibits are quite thorough. It's just that the ordinance says something, and that was the kind of the missing exhibit, the posting.
Yes, we're talking about this Title 21 right now. So
it's a good time for me to bring these to your attention then. So thank you for your report today and for the preparation of the staff report and the submittal of the exhibits. I think that's it for your testimony at this time.
Yes.
Great. Please stay in the room if you can, and maybe questions that come up as others testify. Would the applicant's representative come forward? Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear to tell truth and testimony you give today?
I do.
Thank you.
My name, for the record, is William M. Palmer. I'm a land use planning consultant here representing Deborah Quantz and Deborah Lee Quantz.
You know, I'm glad you said both because I wasn't quite sure how to refer to her. The name is given several ways, and sometimes it's a small L. And what do you call her?
I call her Deborah. But
Deborah, should we use Deborah then in our decision?
Right.
Okay.
One of the questions that you ask is how much of the setback area is impinged upon. I was surprised that Jeff didn't tell you that when we were in the submittal process, he didn't like my narrative and wanted me to address that in more detail. And the project narrative that was Part of the application material does give you the specifics of what our variance encroachment is and therefore the need for the variance application.
Okay, and, so I should, because I was referring more to the site plan, but you have a,
right. Now, there's
more detailed narrative.
A narrative, and Jeff was pretty insistent that that narrative be more explicit than what I originally gave him, so I revised it to provide that more specific information.
Thank you. I'll make sure I look at that. We do have that as an exhibit, the variance narrative, so I will review that in more detail.
One of the other, I was very interested in your initial question of Mr. Smith regarding the need for the variance given the existing building, and I had the same question in my mind when I started working on this project, whether we even needed a variance at all. Since our proposal did not involve site areas that weren't either paved or occupied by a building, or in the case on this exhibit that shows up there, you'll see the number 147, which is actually the parcel number. That's a graveled parking area that's currently used, and I just formalized it more in the site plan. but we're not proposing to use any portion of the site other than as it's in the current situation, with one exception, and that is we're proposing more landscaping around the building than you will find. The aerial photograph that both the county and I submitted shows that it's the pavement area extends right to the perimeter of the building. Minor exception to that on the north side of the building, but on the east side, it goes right up to it. And on the west side, there is a paved area that allows us to have access out to North Lake Way Northwest. And so we saw no need to change any of the physical properties of the site other than to add landscaping to reinforce screening, and that we are proposing to do. The kind of landscaping that we're showing on the site, and there was a landscape schedule that accompanies this site plan, shows the type of vegetation that we envisioned that we would provide. Now, along the east boundary, there is a 6-foot fence. If you look back at the aerial photograph, and I'm not sure how to get back to that by arrow keys. I have paper exhibits, but if we go back, that dark line looks like somebody drew a line on a map with a felt tip pen or something. That is where the fence is, and the reason it shows up dark is because of shadow effect. So we're not changing the fence location. We're only adding a landscape strip on the interior of it so that we can reinforce the screening along the property line. You'll notice as the fence progresses around the east property line that it goes interior to the site, and north of that fence is a very extensive drain field, which does show up on the site plan. It was designed for the tavern facility and the kind of waste material that would normally come from a tavern. That area is just going to be, it's grass now. and the prospect of it being utilized, if it is utilized later, we'll have to go through this same kind of process. So at the moment, we're not proposing to use that area, even though the requirements for one bathroom in the existing building are a great deal less than kitchen facilities that have requirements for grease traps, and it's got two bathrooms, of course, and a couple, three sinks and all kinds of stuff that contribute to the need for the large system, which we don't have now. And incidentally, all the grease traps and the initial processing of septic waste takes place. I think I don't know if it'll show up when I use the pointer, but maybe my pointer didn't. Yeah, there it works. This little area right in here, I don't know if that shows up on your screen or not, but that area right in there, a bit to the northwest of the existing building, that's where the septic tanks are and the grease traps and all the stuff that we're not proposing to change that area either. So that will remain. It's kind of a landscaped area, but vegetation is not anything to write home about. But I thought I would tell you that that's part and parcel of the septic system. The other part is right in here and right in here.
Mm-hmm.
And the caretaker's residence, which is a manufactured home, has a separate septic system. Mm-hmm. The reserve area for that separate system is right in front of the manufactured home, which is in this location, and its actual drain field is behind that manufactured home. And we're not proposing to change that, although my client has informed me that she wishes to upgrade that mobile home. I call it a mobile home, manufactured home, to be technically correct. But it will be occupied the same location and site configuration.
What's the intended use of that? Would there be someone living in it?
It's going to be for residents, to an on-site residents for my client, who will be the operator of this facility.
I see. Okay. So someone will be on site.
Yes. There is someone on site now. It just will be my client versus the caretaker that's there now.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, if you show up on that site to inspect, he's likely to come out and ask you why you're there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm jumping around a little bit, but the patio area, which we talked about here, and you raised questions about it, there is a future expansion possibility of the storage facilities that would occur at that portion of the building. There's things that will happen in this building that we try to protect against for the future, but may not happen for a period of time. Mm-hmm. One of which is stacking three pods above each other.
Within the building?
No, out on the perimeter of the building,
uh-huh.
Where we showed it on the site plan. I was mindful of your comments regarding that stacking facility, and my first response is that, yes, it can occur, and we wanted to provide for that in the future, but it's going to take a while to get the marketplace built up to utilize pod storage.
Mm-hmm.
And typically what happens with pods are that they take pods to a site, truck them to a site, drop them off, people load the pods and take whatever time they want to. And some people have pods on their site for quite a long time. But if the pods are then picked up eventually, and they might be transported clear across the country,
mm-hmm.
or In some cases, people know they're coming back to the area, but they're going to be gone for a job or in the service. And so they will want those pods someplace that they're accessible and maybe need to come from time to time to get something, some of their personal effects out of those pods. So there will be some pod storage and some that's stored at a customer's residence or place of business for some period of time. There is going to be in and out, but the frequency is not every day. And if one pod goes out a day or several, you may not see any more activity for weeks at a time.
So when they're stacked, is that with
forklift?
They'll
use a forklift of some sort to stack them.
So that activity, is that a daily activity, stacking and unstacking?
Not daily, but it may happen several days in a row, and then you wouldn't see anything happen for perhaps months.
Mm-hmm. What are the operation hours? Would that be
well, the operation hours is the facility will operate like most mini storages, where come 9 o'clock in the evening, you can't get in, at least not to truck anything in and out. It's the way it works for the mini storage that I utilize. And it'll be similar. Typically, they're going to want the operator will have a little office space, and right now we're thinking that office space will be in this corner of the building, right there.
Kind of at the entry.
Subject to confirmation by Deborah that's where she wants it, but it's close to where we're going to have an entrance, and that means control of the facility.
So why would one come there? Is it where you would access your pod? Is that part of the
idea? Yeah, it's access pod, but inside the building, all the tavern accoutrements are going to be removed, and there will be individual storage units inside the building, not unlike a mini storage facility that you will find many locations around Kitsap County. You'll have access by key code or a key, or the building will be open during the hours, typically at 8 o'clock in the morning till 9 in the evening. After that period of time, nobody's there, or even if there is a caretaker there, nobody gets to come in.
So your client would want to restrict access to the site except from the hours of 8 till 9?
Right.
And how would that be done?
Well, there will be a security fence and gate across this area here and this area here. This will be primarily an exit point, whereas the entrance here, so there will be a controlled fencing across here and on the west side of the building.
And about that, there was, I think, some comment, public comment letter about the right-of-way and how gate
might
open. Yeah,
Fire Marshal's office, representing the different fire chiefs around, basically says that if you got to have a fence across here, you have to have some stacking room in there so you aren't hanging out into the flow of traffic along North Lake Way Northwest. And that is a reasonable expectation for any kind of facility like this.
Okay.
And the site plan we're showing, whereas it does not indicate the exact location of the fence and gate, we will comply with the Fire Marshal's recommendation conditions of approval. One more comment about the landscaping. It was my assessment that we needed some more than it was the staff's. And we will use people. Something that's gone out of vogue is arborvita. But arborvita is a cone or tree that grows up pretty rapidly, usually within 3 to 5 years, it's reached a height of 8 to 12 feet. Mm-hmm. It still may be something we will consider. Whatever we put in there will be of fast-growing nature so that it does get up to screen ultimately to a height of 24 feet. Okay. And it can do so in a very narrow space because arborvitae will grow that high, mm-hmm. as will several other species. Mm-hmm. We won't be stacking pods on day one. That's the reason for the RV storage possibility. And I'll second the comments of Jeff Smith. It's people will leave their RVs in place for a very long time, causing people to wonder if it might not be more cost effective to just rent a motel someplace, or a hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not our decision.
We're not going to advise on that.
We're not here to advise it, but we will take advantage of the fact that storing it at the house is a less secure place than a facility like this.
Okay. And so what's anticipated? Is that a big part of the business? Is it your client expect maybe a few, like, you know, more friends
now,
and
now that you
affiliates?
Ask,
yeah.
I will give you a little bit of my benefit of my experience. There's a facility that you pass on Highway 16, either going south or north, on Spring Creek Road. And I happen to have done the market study for that mm-hmm. Facility. And I grossly I told my client there was a need for RV storage, but I grossly underestimated what I thought the need was. Mm-hmm. Now, that's in a rural area. In some respects, it has attributes not unlike this. And there's people that you would think, well, I got 5 acres or I got 2 acres. I got room to store my RV in my own place. Mm-hmm. But they don't always have the security that is afforded by this kind of a facility. And in that case, they're drawing on Gig Harbor as well as most of South Kitsap. So they got it. They don't have any other facility in this area that provides the kind of RV space that
well, when you looked at it for this site, How many could be accommodated?
Not very many compared to that site. That's a 10 yeah. acre site down there.
Right.
So there,
right.
and it was intended to be all mini storage, but they.
There's a lot of demand for the RV storage. Yeah. Well, that's what I was curious about, and I have noticed that facility. So here, given the site plan and the restrictions of the use of the site because of, well, for one, just getting in and out and
the getting in is not a problem, but parking it in there is going to have some natural limitations mm-hmm. because typically you need, if you perpendicular park, you need somewhere between 30 and 44 mm-hmm. feet of space, which also means a similar amount of driveway area so you can maneuver in and out. We don't quite have that. We have probably smaller RVs to envision than some of the big ones. Mm-hmm. Just the natural limitation of this site. Getting in and out is not a problem because we made provision for fire trucks to enter and leave the site. They will come out here. That's why we want to maintain that. Exit there, and they'll come in here. A lot of them can circulate here and come back out this way, but bigger vehicles will make that trip.
Okay.
And all the turning radiuses that are required for a fire truck kind of vehicle are accommodated in our site plan proposal.
Well, with that discussion then, and looking at the paved area, no drain field, Maybe. Is it partly that parcel 147 that you pointed to earlier?
Yeah, that's the parcel. That's the number for the whole parcel.
But the whole parcel, okay. It's right on top of. I'm just trying to determine where might there be RV storage that doesn't interfere with access of emergency vehicles or fire. Would it be along? Well, tell me.
I can suggest one way you could get some larger RVs in there, and that's consideration of this area. I'm proposing to meet our parking requirements there, but for long term, this will be primarily pod storage and not RVs. RVs would be interim way, and we could move our required parking to occupy that spot without.
I see.
And accommodate some bigger RVs and utilize this area without changing its configuration. No new paving. It's gravel primarily in that area, and that's sufficient for RV storage if we use it that way.
But it does seem the site limitations are such that there would be, due to that, a maximum number.
Yes, and I have not calculated the maximum number, but I can project that it. If you parallel park in here and utilize this area right there and move the other required parking for the caretaker and the person who wants to park their truck or car there while they go in and access their unit in here, that's where I can park those, and I can use that area there, and I can probably foreseeably get somewhere between 10 and 12 units.
That's exactly where I was going. So it's not the large RV storage that we see in other areas.
But the benefit to my client, to be candid, is that no improvements or facilities you have to finance to make that happen other than the gate. And they get some income return while they're building their business. And that seems to be their objective, and a laudable one at that.
It's a sensible business plan.
Right.
Yeah. And you've had a lot of experience with land use development. I ask this of Mr. Smith, and you might have some insight too. What about the impacts from RV storage versus the pod storage that you explained?
Well, I'm going to rely on my association with the project down on Spring Creek Road. It's Reliable Storage's facility, and their movement of RVs in and out of the site is infrequent. In some cases, RVs are there for months. They even have truckers that store their long-haul trucks there. So they may be there for a couple of weeks while they're on vacation, and then they get back in the rigs and they're gone. So I would say that the frequency of movement in and out of the site would be typically best once a week and two or three times a month.
Okay, so very
that's
limited.
A projection.
You agree with that was Mr. Smith's assessment as well. And your client doesn't intend to have any long-haul trucks on the site.
I don't think so.
No, it would be difficult.
Right.
So it really is RV and pods is what we see
and,
for storage.
And you know, RVs include boats that somebody might want to store there, and they come in on trailers, and as do essentially some RVs are hooked up to trailers or trucks in that similar fashion.
Okay. Anything further you want to
offer? Yeah, I do want to discuss it. On page 13, it's a condition of approval number 13, and it has it's a requirement for fire flow. And I want to object to the way it's written because it says it has to be provided, and there is an alternative where fire flow is not required, and that's the alternative we are going to pursue because we've already done the investigation about fire flow. Irwin's Point Water Company says they don't have it available in the area. The other option that's allowed in the building code is to compartmentalize the building so that no portion is more than 3,600 square feet. And when you compartmentalize it, used to be able to do that with a two-hour area separation wall. They changed the requirement. It's now a four-hour area separation wall in which there are no penetrations, i.e. no doors, windows.
Okay.
The building, perimeter of the building and some of the interior walls are concrete block. And you can use concrete block as a four-hour. And it has to extend up above the roof by at least 3 feet so that fire can't jump over it.
Okay. So you're familiar enough with fire code, and you looked at this condition 13. Can't meet that, but you're aware there's other ways
yes.
to meet it. What should we do with that?
Well, I think it's the option available in code is all it needs to say to meet that requirement,
yeah.
the intent of that requirement yeah. as opposed to the
okay, rather than being specific with fire flow, just
right.
shall meet fire code requirements.
Yeah. We had an extensive conversation with the water company about pipe sizes and all that. And there are fire hydrants, and there's a condition of approval relative to fire hydrants. We can do that. We can meet that requirement because
okay.
they're close.
Well, I'm comfortable deleting the condition, which I think is
okay.
what you're proposing, because the fire code remains in place, and deletion isn't seen as, oh, no need to meet fire
yeah.
code.
We've already started the design of the interior of the building, and we've got
okay.
that wall.
Yeah, I'm comfortable doing that out of deference to your experience
yeah.
and knowledge that you would certainly find that other pathway. Okay.
Other than that, whatever questions you have, happy to try to answer them, and if the other testimony... I'll be glad to respond to any other testimony.
Great. Well, thank you for being here, and you did respond to my questions, but let's find out if there are others
okay.
present. Is there anyone else present in the hearing room that would like to make comment on this application or have any questions about it? Yes, sir. Back to the room. Do you want to come forward at this time? Anyone else besides this gentleman that might want to speak to this application? Okay. You're it. We'll take your testimony. I'll ask you first to... take the oath.
Yes.
Do you swear to tell truth and testimony you give today?
Yes, I do.
Thank
yes.
you. And your name, please.
My name is Larry Eiler.
How's that last name?
E-Y-L-E-R.
And so you've been here and listened to the testimony
right.
and
yes.
you had a chance to look at the proposal.
Uh-huh.
You're
a neighboring
property owner, are you?
I live across the street.
Great. Okay, good.
And,
well, I'm interested in what you have to say.
Okay. Some of my questions were answered in what I read. But I didn't realize that the stacking of 24 feet high, that's pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much room there. Then we get a wrecking yard fence with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean.
So is it the visual impact that you'd be concerned
right,
about?
Right. We've mm-hmm. taken a real beating in that neighborhood the last 15 years. And it's just been horrible.
Mm.
And everybody's going to do a lot of things and nothing really happens. What I wanted to know, is there a timeline where things can be done? You know, I mean, like the landscaping, I mean, do they got 10 years to do it? Or
that's a good point.
Business is not
mm-hmm.
good. You know, business is not good. Then money's not there. Does it take a lot longer?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Another question is the exit road between Bob's fence and the bar. That's not very wide.
Right. Is that sufficient to allow
right.
without disturbance? Okay.
That's not very wide. And I know there's turning radiuses, but there's also not much room either when you do come out.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no shoulder across the street.
Okay.
There's no shoulder at all on that side of the street.
Well, we do need answers to that. Other questions? Because I'd like to bring Mr. Palmer up to get some answers.
No, that's that. Oh, then if there's RV parking, I know they're not going to get many in there because there's not a lot of room because that septic took up most of the parking.
Right.
And that's why basically the bar left. There's no parking.
Mm-hmm.
But does that mean there's blue tarps then?
Oh, over to cover the RV.
Right.
Which is kind of a sign of.
So horrible.
Visual blight. Right. A lot of people see that as. Yeah.
Right. So just questions.
No, those are good questions. And maybe you can just, stand off the side and bring Mr. Sure. Palmer up and see what answers he has, and we'll go from there. Maybe get a dialogue going if we need to. And as to the stacking of the pods, I mentioned this earlier when Mr. Smith was testifying, that it seems to me that even though arborvitae can grow fast, the 24 feet is up there. And the condition that I was considering was that there not be stacking until the landscape's in place to provide the visual screening. And I think that's consistent with what you testified to as to the business plan, is that's the area that would have to grow over
right,
time.
Right, but I will add this addendum that if you double stack, you're only at 16 feet. And as the vegetation grows up to allow for stacking, if that's the direction of the restriction, then that the stacking would be no higher than the vegetation is that would provide the screening.
Right.
Is the a better way to describe it than just nothing until the trees are up 24 feet.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, at some point,
right.
Maybe two would be screened. Okay. Yeah.
that kind of addresses Mr. Eiler's interest in time frames when things will happen. Valid concern. And the leads me to say that aside from RVs being parked on the site, most of the initial work will be to get the inside of the building remodeled with storage facilities inside the building, storage units. That will probably occupy the next 6 months to 9 months to get all that done, depending on how many contractors they're hiring to do all of that. But the RV storage would be something after the fencing is completed across the two entrances, mm-hmm. would happen pretty much immediately. Again, not many, but mm-hmm. some of the spaces, just to give you an idea for what it costs to park your RV there, is something on the order of a couple hundred a month, maybe as much as, depending for the large spaces, mm-hmm. they can go up to as high as $400 a month.
It's not covered storage.
No, it's not covered. So you're not going to get the kind of prices you would perhaps down there at the reliable storage facility that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
There are, regarding RVs that are covered, most boats that are put in storage are covered, and they're not covered with blue plastic typically, but they have their own pre-fitted covers.
Yeah, makes sense, because that keeps them from blowing off and they're not flapping around as much. But what about this blue tarp concern?
Let's say an RV that comes in that's going to be in storage, they also typically have a pre-fitted cover.
Mm-hmm.
I know what the objection to blue plastic is. I've had my wife complain about just the pile of dirt that we had covered by that. So I'm sympathetic to that kind of cover material. And
well, I think you gave a direction that seems suitable, is pre-fitted covers, certainly
right.
appropriate. But and that I would think your client, too, would want that to
it provides the best protection. They don't have
best
to
best protection
about.
And a better sense of a storage yard that's well kept, and,
right.
and not just a.
And the other advantage to this facility really is that you got a caretaker that also owns the property, is going to be there managing it, and when she couldn't be there, other family members would take over, perhaps employees, but I. They're concerned about as much about security and how things appear as
that's essential to the success of the business.
Right.
That there's a perception and actual security of the site for those that are utilizing it.
Mr. Eiler had another comment relative to traffic movements in and out of the site and whether that would wind up being a problem for the property across the street. I'm assuming on the south side of his comments are pertinent to the south side of North Lake Way Northwest, but most of the RVs, which would have to include fire trucks, are going to maneuver with typically 35-foot inside radius turns. So,
you know, I can't tell on your site plan. I don't see that distance or the width of that. Do you know the width of that exit way?
This is about 12 feet, which is sufficient size for a one-way access.
Well, you do have it on there. I see that now.
The county fire marshal, representing all the fire districts, they have, in fact, they have as a part of the condition of approval that they need a traffic lane of 20 feet for double passage of vehicles, and that is provided on the site plan. It's shown that we can meet that requirement. Mm-hmm. In fact, I provided 24, I believe, feet for that. So we meet that requirement. The corresponding need along the west side of the building here is minimum 10 feet. I don't consider that adequate. So I provided 12. In fact, that's basically what the pavement is on that side of the building anyway. This radius here, which on your thing, that radius meets the 35-foot turning radius if for traffic were to go west of the facility. If they come back out east, they would come into this lane, and they've got no problem making that. It's only the right turn out and the right turn in when you have to have that. Okay. In some cases, the left turn, and we will have the left turn.
Okay, good. Well, thank you for the responses. Mr. Eiler, did you hear responses from Mr. Palmer that address your concerns? Okay. Okay, please come forward.
The parking out front,
mm-hmm.
and I did see in here that is that going to be labeled no parking between the fog line and the establishment? Because there's like 17 feet there, and people love to park there.
And there's parking that goes on there now. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, since the bar is closed, there hasn't been.
Okay.
But what that is an aisleway for traffic, foot traffic.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a good question, just where the fence might go and whether foot traffic would be restricted.
And the school bus lots out there, and there's approximately 37 kids that get off that bus every night, uh-huh. and they get on, too.
Okay.
And they basically all go to the trailer court. And
well, good. I'm glad you're here. That's a legitimate question. Mr. Palmer's right behind you. Let's see if we can get a clear answer.
If there's anybody parked there, nobody's coming out that building safe.
Right. It would block the exit. Have you considered that?
Get to the site plan exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to the building to measure or to inspect or whatever, I park in that same place he's just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Again, for the record, William M. Palmer. but if you note on our site plan, we had some concern about that very issue. We are not proposing any parallel parking in front of the building. In fact, we're proposing to formalize our entrances and to provide some green space. Now, when the surveyor gets out there and starts surveying the property line, and it was surveyed at one point in time, we may find that we have to pull our sidewalk in a little bit more than what I'm showing on the site plan. But the concept is that this isn't going to be paved area as it is today.
Okay.
There's going to be provision for pedestrian access and as much landscaping as we can provide in the future.
Okay, well, that answers the concern, I think. And what I will do, no surprise, Mr. Palmer, these concerns that come up today, which thankfully he's addressing directly, no parking in front of building, I'll put those in my decision so there won't be any surprises. And then you can, you know, watchdog that through the process, because whether it's Mr. Palmer or anyone else, you'll have that in the decision, that these concerns, thank you, have been considered and they will be addressed. Okay, thank you, sir. All right, any further testimony on this application? I don't see any indication of that, so I'm going to close the record on this. We'll address the concerns with conditions and my decision that I will issue within the next 10 working days. And if you sign in today, you'll get a copy mailed directly to you. All right? We're going to move to the next hearing then.
Staff would like a minute to set up. The consultant has some PowerPoint presentation that you'd like to present.
Okay, we'll take a 2-minute break.